Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome back to We Made a Beer. My name's Louise.
My name's Lucy.
And this is We Made a Beer, the podcast in which we, two beer novices, find out about beer by brewing it, drinking it, and chatting to the experts about it. This is season two, which means we're going big and we're brewing much better beers.
Now, hold up. Before we go proclaiming that we'll be making better beer, I think we need to get a little bit more of a handle on what actually makes one beer better than another. Until this point, we've been going around tasting beers and analysing them largely using the words yum, yuck, or meh.
Or bleh.
Or
in worst case scenarios.
We probably need to start putting more of an objective spin on things. In this episode, we meet Rob Lovett, head brewer at Thornbridge Brewery, who explains why it's important for them to brew consistent and innovative beers.
We could get by just producing Jaipur like we always did, but I think people would lose interest in what we're doing. And also, we love it, you know, making new beers all the time. It's fantastic for the brewers.
The Thinking Drinkers teach us how to use all our senses when tasting beer.
If you stick your finger up your nose as far as it can go and then go even further, you can apparently touch what is technically part of your brain.
And we find out what was wrong with the IPA recipe we developed in season one.
There are a few confusing decisions that it looks like were made here. Your aroma hops were negligible in terms of amounts.
As always, we're making this podcast alongside the lovely folks at YouBrew London, an open brewery where you brew the beer. Last week, we brewed a quickly soured, mojito-inspired beer. Here's how it turned out.
The colour's beautiful. It's really light. Carbonation's nice. It's got really nice mouthfeel. It's a nice beer, guys.
I'd like it to come in a more fancy vessel, if possible.
I think this would be awesome served with fresh mint as well.
The point was to brew a beer that didn't taste like beer, and I think we successfully managed to achieve that. So all in all, it's a pretty good start to season two. This week, we want to explore what makes a beer good and how to tell if what you're drinking is something special. And while we're talking about good beer, it seems only fitting that we right some of the wrongs of season one. Before we have a go at brewing and bettering our recipe, however, we need to get a handle on what exactly we did wrong the first time round. So we headed to YouBrew to talk through our original recipe with Tash.
So this is our recipe from last time. I can hear you laughing, I can see you laughing. So what did we do wrong?
Can I just clarify that most of the recipes last season I helped you guys with. This is the one that I didn't help you with.
Basically, we had a nice time in the sort of the dry store and we smelt things and we were like, this smells great, can we use this? And then Matt was like, yeah, why not?
Okay, it's not an objectively bad recipe. There were a few kind of confusing decisions that it looks like were made here. I mean, to begin with, the malts were Marisotter, fine, Caramalt, fine, Munich, fine. Quite a lot of dark crystal malt, which is a...
Well, first of all, we really liked the name. And then the second error, Lucy, I want to pass the microphone on due to shame.
I don't know whose fault it was really, but we very much mismanaged the measurements and went a bit OTT on the dark crystal malt. It does sound sexy, though. It does sound like sort of sexy stripper lady.
I also like the phrase mismanaged the measurements. We've still managed to dart around the fact that we didn't weigh it properly.
It was fine. It was a bit darker than it should have been to be an IPA. I just think the other issue was that we just didn't have enough hops, particularly when you're thinking about what is like popular and what people want. Your bittering hops were quite high, your aroma hops were negligible in terms of amounts, and your dry hop, which is where you get the most of that really juicy aroma, was really, really small. So we're going to tone back the bitterness a bit. What we're going to do is an American IPA, we're going to use big American hops, Cascade, Citra, Centennial, Chinook, the kind of big C's as they're called. And then also you get some kind of lesser known hops, particularly ones from Australia and New Zealand have really tropical kind of like passion fruit, mango and guava, really like tropical fruit flavours. So we're going to try and use a lot of those hops to give us that really, that juicy tropical aroma.
Sweet, that sounds really good. And then at what point do you dry hop? Is it still 5 days like we did last time?
Yep, still going to be 5 days. The time was right there. Just just so whereas you've put a 10-gram dry hop. So admittedly, the batch size that you guys brewed last time was about 20 litres, I think. We're looking at brewing about 35, 40 litres this time, just because we're scaling up a little bit, we're kegging it all. We're probably going to do a 250 to 400-gram dry hop.
That's quite a difference, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's a lot more. So exactly how much dry hop flavour do you think we got into our beer last time?
I would say with 10 grams of dry hop, it just... But you could have not done it, you know?
So there we go. It turns out that our original IPA recipe was a bit of a shocker. This time round, we're going to make some vast improvements. If you're a home brewer or keen to learn, you can check out our full improved IPA recipe at wemadeabeer.co.uk. Keep listening to find out whether we managed to improve upon our first attempt. Now, so far, our approach to tasting has been a bit opinion-based. We can drink a beer and tell you if we like it or don't, but explaining why we feel the way we feel is tricky.
We don't have the vocab and often find that we don't know what to look out for in a beer. So we met up with the Thinking Drinkers to get some advice on tasting beer a little more objectively. The Thinking Drinkers are made up of Ben McFarland and Tom Sandham. Ben is the Triple Crowned winner of the British Beer Writer of the Year Award, and together they co-wrote the award-winning Good Beer Guide West Coast USA. So basically, when it comes to booze... they know their shit, and we were hoping they could impart some of that wisdom onto us.
We started by asking them to talk us through the Thinking Drinker mantra, drink less, drink better.
We're drinks experts, and we've been writing and talking about it for the last 15 years, and we recognise trends in certain areas of people drinking excessively and not particularly well. If the country has a drinks problem at all, it's that people drink badly. And we were talking to a lot of consumers with our comedy show, which is a tasting event. And we just felt that if you put good quality booze in front of people that you have to spend a bit more on, then you don't need to drink quite as much of it. You're not inclined to if you spend a bit more on it because it's a bit more discerning. So you drink in a more responsible fashion. So we do it all on a stage, invariably wearing our underpants, which seems
fabulous.
To make the message hit home.
I have actually somewhat. Seen you both in quite a small amount of clothing.
Yeah. on stage, just to clarify.
In real life or the show, I haven't seen this. So for the people who haven't had the benefit of seeing you in not very much, Tom, what happens at one of your shows?
So, we've had three incarnations of it. This year, we're writing a history of alcohol. So in the show, we give out 5 free drinks and then we'll go through the epic history of alcohol and how alcohol has influenced pretty much everything that's ever happened in human history. Incidents in politics, and war and art. People like Jesus pop in there. Jesus turned water into beer, not wine, which not a lot of people know. We'll tell you more about that if you come and see our show.
Cool. Well, we thought we'd have a chat to you guys about tasting beer.
And the budget on this show is such that it is one beer and a tiny little taste each.
Yeah. Right.
Drink less, drink better. Yeah,
yes, there we go.
Exactly. Okay, so the first one we've got is Pressure Drops Cheeky Tropical Session IPA. So this is at 3.8%.
Session IPAs seem to be the thing at the moment, don't they? The IPA kind of hops arms race got to such a point. The sort of people trying to brew IPAs with more and more hops, you know, doubling them, imperialing them. It seems to have got to a point where people are like, okay, let's bring it down now, put your guns away.
Yeah.
And we'll go for a bit more sessionable. And also, I think brewers have realised that you can only sell so many really hoppy beers because people have one and go, that was enough, thanks.
The smell is crucial. What do they say? Between 70 and 90% of what you taste comes through your sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
So if you hold your nose, you're not going to taste anything. So we always smell.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Apparently, if you stick your finger up your nose as far as it can go and then go even further, you can apparently touch what is technically part of your brain.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And that part of your brain is related to your smell, obviously, because it's in your nose. And that is very close to part of your brain which records memory, which is why when you smell an old perfume or aftershave or anything that evokes a memory, it's very, very vivid.
Mm-hmm.
And if you hold your nose while you're tasting, you will not taste anything.
No.
Mm-hmm.
So get your nose right in there.
There is a hell of a lot going on the nose. Very, very fruity. Does it come through on the palate?
I don't... The nose on that is much more potent than the palate, isn't it?
It is.
It's still very good.
I don't, yeah, I like it. I like it in this glass. I'm not sure whether I drink a pint of it.
Mm-hmm. But that doesn't, that is, you don't need to drink a pint of it. I keep telling you this. Mm. It's a very British disease we have. No. Everyone goes, I like it, I can't drink a pint of it. And you're like, you don't have to.
But I mean, we always say you wouldn't pour a pint of wine into a pint glass, so why do we do it with beer? And we should be a bit more discerning with it. But there are some wines that I could drink a pint of. Sure. And that's a beer I couldn't drink a pint of. So.
Right, so shall we move on to our next beer? This one is Buxton Brewery Axe Edge. 6.8%.
That looked more like an IPA.
Certainly, if you give it a swirl.
Yeah, it's got
round the glass. You can tell it's got a bit more potency than the first one. Yeah, thicker head, and also it's clinging to the glass a little bit more.
And that means is that an indication of higher ABV? Something
it should. Yeah, I mean, it's in the spirits world, as in the drinks, not the afterlife. the legs really do cling to the glass, but and it happens a bit with beer
And wine. It smells a lot sort of greener, doesn't it? There's none of that tropical sweet fruit on the nose.
You're very grassy.
Yeah, it is.
I find it funny when people talk about grassiness, because generally I don't want to eat grass.
No.
It's funny, but
I am
does
not
smell
a cow.
Like grass.
Grass is a nice smell, isn't it?
It is pleasant.
Fresh and herbaceous.
Yes. Herbaceous.
Nice.
Wow, raise skills.
That sort of tasting, is it?
But if using a sort of lexicon of descriptors is quite good, and I know people can think it's a bit pretentious, but again, I wouldn't do it in a pub.
Well, also, it's only pretentious if you're finding things in there that really the average person can't discover. It's nice to have a bit of a basic set of words and smells that people can relate to. Mm-hmm. However, you know, that smells like the apple cake that my grandmother used to make, and it would waft out of the window while I was playing in the garden chopping wood.
Oh,
yeah, come
shut
off. It smells of apples. It's fine. It's fine.
So it's big hop aromas, big hop bitterness in there as well. But it's got balance as well. The brewer's art is all about balancing the sweetness of the malt with the bitterness of the hop and maybe the fruitiness of the yeast as well coming in.
And is a perfect beer going to showcase all three of those things?
Well, then you're getting back into style. I think different styles showcase different elements. So, yeah, an IPA should have some bitterness in there. A porter, the mineral character of the water is very important. And I mean, then you've got Doppelbocks and stuff and things like that which are sweeter.
You can trade on all of those things.
Yeah.
You can put them at the forefront of your marketing messages, and they can be the things that people really do taste first or that they really retain as a flavour profile. But I do still think you should, a really good quality beer, you should be able to talk about all of those things in there, even if they're very subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes down to drinking a lot of beer and talking a lot about it. So not everyone's going to be able to taste everything in it. But if something really just dominates, like a bitterness, then it's very difficult to appreciate it over a pint.
Yeah.
You have a mouthful and like the fact that, wow, that is interesting, but I don't want to drink any more of it.
So. I think the big criticism of the big IPAs is that they're one-dimensional and they're quite easy to brew. You just throw loads of hops in and that disguises lots of different flaws. And I think where British brewers traditionally, and something we should be very proud of, is British brewers have been the best in the world historically at brewing beer at a low gravity, low ABV, and brewing beers with balance that have the hop notes in there, the barley sweetness as well. And I think in this kind of new wave brewing, we're at risk of forgetting that those are the really good beers. And if you go to America now, they're desperately trying to do that. And then you go on to the lager styles, and if you're drinking Budweiser, for instance, people would criticise that for being this big, bad beer, but incredibly difficult to brew. And they get it consistently right every single time. And that might not, and you might not like what they brew, but that, from a brewer's art point of view, that is very, very impressive.
Yeah, the balance is, there's nothing to hide behind with that one.
Exactly. It's like someone said, I think Roger Ryman, who's a brewer at St. Austell, said brewing a beer like that is like running down a beach with no clothes on. Like, you're showing all your flaws.
Yeah, it's a lovely analogy.
Yeah, thanks. He's a big guy.
So back to this Buxton.
Well, I think it's doing that. It's got a level of fruitiness, which I'm assuming is coming from the yeast. It's got bitterness, which I'm assuming is coming from the hops. But it's got a body to it. It's not sweet and rich, but you can tell that it's got some malt in there. And there's definitely some water because it's wet.
It is.
Oh, yeah.
So the way they put water in that is amazing.
Well, I mean, it is
they've
really good
got
water, that amount of good water, right, haven't they? Good water. And the head's still there. I mean, that still looks very appealing. So they've.
It's a very well-brewed beer.
So is it really hard to get a low ABV like this pressure drop 3.8% one in that same bitterness with those same with that same balance?
Would it seem out of whack a little bit in some cases?
Well, I think the aroma was bigger than the palate, wasn't it, in terms of the hop character. So I think the low ABV is, that's the challenge there.
But big flavour and ABV don't necessarily go hand in hand.
No. We did a double IPA judging out in San Francisco when we were there. They had about 100 double IPAs from around California. We were in a basement in a bar in San Francisco.
It was like something out of Pulp Fiction.
It was pretty terrifying. But we had two of these sort of 11% beers with double hopped, and you just thought, well, that's it. I can't taste anything else. You've really overcooked it. And there were a lot of people looking seriously into their glass and looking very earnest and giving you marks. But
there was one guy, bear in mind this was a double IPA competition, who he just kept putting the nose to his, into the glass and then closing his eyes and going, quite hoppy.
Can definitely get hops.
Yeah. You're like,
is that what
is? I wonder where Sherlock Holmes had gone to.
Shall we move on to our most boozy, 7.2%, the Kernel IPA. With Eldorado. Eldorado is the hop, right?
Yes.
And again, it looks very nice, doesn't it? It looks a lovely amber colour.
From what I understand with Kernel, they have set styles, but he'll take a style and play around with different hops, and whatever's available, or if he discovers a new hop, he'll make that beer style with a different hop, so you're always going to get something different. There's not that consistency, but it's a wonderful way of showcasing.
One of my favourite beers over the last few years has been their table beer.
Oh, that's great.
Because they actually managed to do that, tick a lot of those flavour boxes, but with a very low ABV, and I find with two kids under the age of three and a very serious lack of sleep,
that's a good way of getting them to go to bed,
rub it on their gums, and they're fine. I do need a lower ABV drink now because I cannot handle a hangover in any way.
Yeah.
And no one should have to handle a hangover. It's very responsible. But that ability to brew with those ingredients and deliver flavour across the board on any ABV. Now, this is not a table beer. What was the ABV on this?
7.2.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay, so I won't
brought the big guns out.
Yeah. For the kids tomorrow morning.
Well, actually, it doesn't drink like a 7.2.
So it looks a bit deeper. What do you think this one smells like in comparison to the
one? It wasn't quite as potent as them.
One of my mates, who's quite sceptical about the sort of new wave of beer scene, describes these IPAs as like drinking potpourri. And
I can understand.
I can understand where he's coming with that. And some of them have that aroma, and he's like, it's just too much. And this is actually, he'd probably like this because the nose on it is, it doesn't feel like you're in a boots.
I've skipped ahead. I'm so sorry. I've already had a big sip. I think it's lovely.
Yeah, it's really nicely balanced, that. It's quite rich.
It's a lot richer than the others, isn't it? And that does come across on the nose. I was going to say there's a sort of marmalade orange on the nose, which is very different to what we've just been smelling on the other two beers.
And I'd say actually the citrusy notes of the hop come through on the palate much more than the other two, even though you can't smell it, weirdly.
That's lovely. It's not quite as, doesn't feel quite as carbonated as the Buxton, but I quite like that as well. I think the carbonation is something I associate with those American styles quite.
Well, they love a bubble over there, don't they?
They do.
We've had three IPAs of three different volumes. All of them are classed as an IPA.
Yep.
So does this ability to sort of completely break rules make beer better because you can get so much more flavour, or does it actually make it a little bit harder for a consumer to kind of get what they're going to expect when you order a pint of that beer?
Well, I think the styles are ridiculous now. There's so many and they're always changing. And as we're tasting IPAs today, there'll be sort of beer geeks maybe who are very, very adamant that an authentic IPA has to be at a strength that would have withstood the journey in the 18th century to India. But actually, by the 1850s, IPAs went back to being 3-4%. So it's just as an authentic IPA if it's the first one we tasted. So
I think it's a positive and a negative. I think the story is beer, isn't it? And all this noise and all the confusion and conversation in the world around beer is positive because suddenly it's on the agenda. And when we started out, I mean, the fact that Ben won 3 awards is evidence that, you know, there weren't many people.
No one was doing it. Tallest dwarf. I really was.
But it was really, I mean, there's Michael Jackson and Roger Protz, and there were people doing it. But now, how many, I mean, you're making podcasts. It's really great. And if there's confusion, that's brilliant, because it just means we have to talk about it some more. So that's
super. Mm-hmm.
Roughly, even though those are different strengths, the basic core flavour profiles are quite similar, mm-hmm. aren't they? They're quite fragrant, floral, fruity, with a bit of bitterness in there.
But equally, there are people who are really into beer and buy those 3 beers, have them with cheese after dinner, do a tasting, and you can talk about that. And the fact that they're all so different is intriguing.
Also, I don't think we should worry too much about it. You can drink some of the best beers in the world for very reasonable prices. I mean, people complain about the cost of beer all the time. And the more you pay for it, the more the brewers are going to get, the better beer they make.
Mm.
So if people want to drink less and drink better, what are your tips?
How
do you drink less?
Learn more about what you're drinking. Just by learning a bit more about it, the ingredients that are used, the provenance, the passion that's gone into it, invariably you find that the products that have got more of those stories attached to them, people who care about it, brewers that really care about their job, those products cost more and taste better.
And also, I think the best way to taste a beer is to go to the place where it's brewed. A, get it fresh, but B, see the sort of cultural context in which it's brewed. And
I'm never going to forget drinking Sierra Nevada in Chico. And Chico still stands out as one of the great cities of the towns of the world.
Do you think there's sort of specific places that are kind of like, we are going to do beer, you know, this is a beer bar and we sell a few spirits back there, but are they the best place to go and like try loads of different stuff and ask people, because generally their staff are likely to be a bit more passionate about it?
I like beer bars like the Brewdog bars are great in terms of their range, and the staff are knowledgeable and they seem to be trained up very well. But I think there's something about the monoculture of any of these things that can put some people off.
Mm.
I think whilst we're in a podcast and we're talking about beer, it seems a bit strange to say, don't get too much into it, because, this is where the tasting comes in. Like, we've done lots of tastings and judged at beer awards and stuff, and we've kind of stopped doing it because sitting in a room for a whole day, sniffing and smelling and writing things down, and saying things like hoppy or malty, that's not what beer's about, really. Yeah. It's about being in a pub or being with your mates. And I still think you should analyse beer in a way that deserves the same kind of reverence as wine or indeed whiskey or any other spirits. Mm. But I think there's a tendency at the moment for one-upmanship amongst quite a lot of people.
Yeah, and it can make it intimidating if you're in a party.
But also what you find is that it becomes a club.
Yeah.
And people like the fact that they know more than the consumer, and that's when it gets really dangerous, because you forget what the consumer actually knows and cares about. And there is a danger that beer will go down that road, and it's happened in the spirits world. We've seen it with whiskey, and whiskey is turning itself around now, trying to be a bit more open.
I don't think people are monogamous in their drinking.
No,
they should.
Right? And if you are, there's something strange going on. But I tell you, the good thing to do is, if you find yourself being kind of intimidated by someone asking whether you've had this beer or whether you get this flavour in the beer, or the best one is to suggest a beer that doesn't exist at all.
Do you have a good one? A good sort of
the one we did in
don't go there, Ben. We got interviewed on the news in San Diego, and we started making brewery names up that were taken from Viz magazine's Profanosaurus.
But you'll know, whatever you say, that other person will go, yes, I have. Mm-hmm. Yes, I have. I think there's too much diacetyl in their beer. And then you know that they're talking nonsense.
Nice. I think the other thing for me is, it's important to remember that it's always subjective. Like, it's so, you can see someone on Instagram or Twitter being like, this is a great beer. And sometimes I'll have this beer and I'm like, actually, it's not for me.
No.
I don't really like it. But it doesn't make it a bad beer.
No, that's very important as well.
Don't be influenced by other people. Unless, of course...
it's the thinking
drinkers. Read books, read our books, because they're the ones that you should listen to.
They're the right answers. Yeah.
Don't talk to other people. I don't really like people.
Big thanks to the Thinking Drinkers for their top tasting tips. They've given us some good guidelines that we're going to put into practice as the season progresses. If you want to see the Thinking Drinkers in action, you can catch them at the Edinburgh Fringe from the 3rd of August to the 26th of August, or on their UK tour.
Visit thinkingdrinkers.com to find out where they're off to. We're keeping an eye out for the launch of their podcast. It's The Drink Talking, coming soon. After the break, we trundle off to the Peak District to visit Thornbridge Brewery. We Made a Beer is brought to you by, well, just us, actually. It's produced, presented and funded by our good selves. This season, though, we're working alongside Honest Brew, our favourite online beer service, to make the beers we talk about in this show more accessible to you. We use Honest Brew to get brewery-fresh craft beer delivered directly to our door, so we've always got some tasty drinks chilling in the fridge. We've partnered with Honest Brew for a limited time to offer you a fantastic mix case. The We Made a Beer case contains 12 great beers that have been either brewed or recommended to us by Season 2's podcast guests, or that have just inspired this series. And if that wasn't enough of a treat, we can get you a whopping £10 off your first order using the coupon code WEMADEABEER. Use it to get the We Made a Beer box or to just expand your beer tasting horizons. To recap, go to honestbrew.co.uk, spend over £30 and use the code WEMADEABEER at checkout for £10 off. Check out the episode description in your podcast player for the full T's and C's. Happy drinking!
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The UK is rife with great breweries right now, so it was a tricky task to choose a single brewery to accompany our What Is Good Beer theme. But after much deliberation, we chose to speak to Thornbridge Brewery. They consistently produce exceptional beer, and most recently they won both gold and silver at the World Beer Cup, the most prestigious beer competition in the world. They've managed to get the balance right between being a consistent, reliable brewery who smash out great traditional beers while remaining at the forefront of experimental brewing and barrel aging. We caught up with head brewer Rob Lovett and Chief Operating Officer Simon Walkden to chat about their success.
Last season, we spoke to the now recently crowned Beer Writer of the Year, Pete Brown, who told us that we had to get our hands on a beer called Serpent. This fantastic beer was the product of a collaboration between Thornbridge Brewery and Garrett Oliver, brewmaster at Brooklyn Brewery. We asked Rob to talk us through how Serpent came about.
I'm not a massive fan of collaborations because what tends to happen is there's not enough input from one party and, it just says it's collaboration, but one brewer tends to have done most of the work. So with this one, when we said that we wanted to do a collaboration, we really wanted for us all to have a big input, and it's something that we're both proud of. And he had this idea of using lees from wine fermentations and adding them to a beer.
What's a lees? Sorry?
It's the bottom of the fermentation, really. So it's all the yeast from the end of the fermentation. So he'd done this previously with wine lees and a beer, and he wanted to try it with cider. So we found a natural cider producer in this country that didn't add yeast. He just used the natural yeast in his environment and on the apples. And he sent us the lees every time he emptied a vessel, and then we brewed this beer and added it to bourbon barrels, and then we put the cider lees into the barrels, and then we let it mature so the bacteria and the yeast from the cider lees then interacted with the beer and gave us a completely unique flavour. So there's the bourbon from the barrel, the cider lees, and the beer itself, and it sort of just changed over the 2 years that we were maturing it in barrel.
How important is it to you to tick the box in terms of the traditional and make sure that you're really competitive in that market and make sure you're really consistent, but also be doing like these really interesting things? Like right now we're sitting in this room full of oak barrels. How important is it for you to tick both boxes? Because I think that's quite unique at the moment.
Yeah, certainly. I think that's what the customer demands at the moment. The customer wants new beers. The customer wants interesting beers. You can't rest on your laurels, really. And if you know, we could get by just producing Jaipur like we always did, but I think people would lose interest in what we're doing. And also, we love it. You know, making new beers all the time. It's fantastic for the brewers, and it keeps them motivated. And I think they'd get bored if they were just making Jaipur every day.
I think also, you know, craft has gone into the mainstream. You look at the supermarkets now. You know, we're finding a lot more opportunity in the supermarkets. We originally dealt with just Waitrose and then into M&S, and now we're into Tesco and soon Asda and Morrison's. I heard a stat yesterday that one in five bottles of beer now bought is a craft beer, which is quite massive when you think 10 years ago the genre probably didn't even exist. So we see different groups of drinkers, your traditional cask beer drinkers, and we want to produce good quality beer for them. Your supermarket buyers who are not going to be into your more extreme styles, let's say. And then there's the craft market. And there is, over time, crossing over between those. And we want to, because we can, and as Rob said, it keeps the brewers interested and exciting. We want to keep doing that and give the customer what they want, whichever that customer may be.
So a question for you probably, Simon, is how hard is it to get a consumer to recognise that Serpent isn't the same sort of beer as Jaipur? Like, you've had a hectic night at work and you don't go home and crack open a bottle of Serpent. It's more of a wine, I'd say. Like, it's a sharing sort of beer. And from a price point perspective, obviously, that's much higher. So how hard or how easy is it to get a consumer used to this sort of new way of consuming beer?
It's an interesting question. I think people are used to spending more on beer now than they ever have. You know, even just some basic styles of beer in the craft beer shops, you could be paying £4 or £5 for a 330ml bottle. We didn't really have a problem with Serpent because the complexity of the beer, who we were doing the beer with, the limited release, 10,000 bottles went to the US, to Brooklyn, 10,000 bottles stayed with us. So even though we still have it available, it's not so difficult. And with the sours that we've done since then, because we won gold and silver at the Beer World Cup, again, these beers are in high demand and we're producing them in low volume because of the nature of the beer. So if we were producing, 200 hectolitres of that particular beer, it would be a greater challenge. But I think people are prepared to spend money on something that's a little bit unusual.
Mm-hmm. Those awards that you won at the Beer World Cup, what do you think the judges are kind of really looking for at those kind of competitions?
Yeah, I mean, I've judged at the Beer World Cup since, well, I'm 40 now, and I think my first Beer World Cup, I went when I was 22 or something, and what amazed me when I first went there is the quality of the judges. I mean, you're rubbing shoulders with, head brewers of, the established American US brewers, and that's what lets us down in this country a lot of the time with judging, is that any Tom, Dick and Harry can be judging. And unfortunately, I think the professionals need to be judging the beers, because although the layman on the street can appreciate what he likes, he can't necessarily articulate faults or what he's tasting or why it's tasting that way. And he probably doesn't understand styles as strictly as a brewer that's, a professional brewer. So to win that competition for us was really important, because we knew that it was being judged by the best and we were up against some real stiff competition.
From a financial perspective, is it kind of scary to make that decision to no longer just do your cask and your keg stuff and have a facility like this full of aging barrels?
It's just a different product that we've got to treat differently. We're going to charge more for it. It's going to be more labour attached to it. So it's just another string to our bow, really, I think.
25% of the beer we produce now is cask beer, yeah. So... We're not trying to change the world. Purely with a financial head on, selling Jaipur alone would probably make more sense, but it wouldn't be as interesting. It wouldn't keep us as respected as we are in the marketplace, and it wouldn't keep our brewers and all the rest of our staff as engaged as they are in the business. And you only get better when people are engaged. So we're not driven, even though I head up the finance side of the business, we're not driven by the finances. We need to make money, but that's not what we're coming in the morning with the sole purpose of doing. If we wanted to, we would cut back on a lot of the ingredients that Rob uses. We wouldn't be doing these sort of things. So, that's not what we want to be. There's other people doing that, and they do that very well.
So we're in this kind of big room full of barrels here, and there's quite a lot of different stuff going on here. What are the projects that you're most excited about currently that are happening in this room?
Well, the two main products here are the beers that won at the Beer World Cup, the gold and silver. Days of Creation and Love Amongst the Ruins. It's a brown ale where we had three strains of Brettanomyces, Lactobacillus, Pediococcus, and one of them we had raspberries and one we had dried cherries too. And then we just sit there and let it do its thing. And so that's the main beer we've got here, and that's the beer that I really want to concentrate on, because I think it was the third iteration of that beer that won, but it's developing and we just want to make sure that we're consistent with it. So I don't want to be distracted by marketeers saying, oh, we need to do this, do that, do that. You know, this is the beer that won the medal, so I want to make sure that we perfect that. But we have got other side projects. There's like a gooseberry one we do, but I think on the kettle sours is probably where we're going to play around a little bit more, rather than fill this up with barrels of all sorts of different things that we don't know how are going to work out.
In terms of the kettling, I think that's quite interesting. I read an article that Tesco's have got a range of sours coming in, and you guys have got one called Tart that's going in there. Is it important for you to brew a sour beer on a scale that you can, which means people in Tesco's and people in supermarkets can get it?
Yeah, I think the kettle sour, sometimes it gets a bit of flack from certain individuals saying, oh, it's lazy man sour. But I think if you accept it for what it is, and the fact that it's, you know, people, we're not going to charge a lot for it because it doesn't really take us any much more time than it does for a normal beer, it's a great product. And there's different variations. Like, I mean, next week we're doing a simple sour with blueberries and passion fruit. So it is a good stepping stone for people to get into sour beers. And I think sour beers are definitely here to stay. It's not sort of like a style that's going to fall out of fashion. So I do think it's important that we do that style, because there's demand for it.
Mm-hmm. Are you guys the first UK producer to be sending a sour beer to a supermarket in such a scale?
Well, certainly in Tesco, we're the only. They selected Tart as their only sour beer, so that they're not looking at the moment to put anyone else in. I think the great thing about it is, by using the supermarkets, it makes the product more accessible. Mm-hmm. And speaking to a couple of craft bottle shop owners recently, rather than them being worried that more of our products are going into supermarkets, it's actually opening doors, because they're now getting customers coming in. I've had that sour, I want to expand into something a little bit more exciting, or to see what other sours there are available. So I think it can work through that, through the different outlets to people, and just give people the opportunity to get a good beer. We're not stuffy about where people buy the beer. The quality will always be the same and always be as good. We haven't cut corners to get beer into the big supermarkets. What we want to do is get good beer to everyone.
Loved speaking to the Thornbridge guys. Such a lovely location too. At the beginning of this episode, we attempted to better the IPA we first tried to conquer in season one. Here's how it turned out.
So this is a 5.5% better IPA than the one we made last time. I think it's just
only
nice.
5.5% better, really?
I like to put everything on a scale. No. 5.5% in strength. I think it looks really nice. It's quite bitter. I guess that's just the IPA style, though, isn't it?
It's pretty bitter, yeah. You can smell the hops on the nose, maybe not as much as we might want. I think if we were to rebrew this, we would bump those aroma hops a little bit.
Definitely tastes already a lot more like an IPA that I would want to drink. It is kind of bitter, and that's what I was expecting, and it's a lot less bitter, and the bitterness is kind of much more integrated into the beer this time than it was last time.
Mm-hmm. So the thing that we've learnt loads in this episode is how beer is all about balance. Mm-hmm. And the obvious thing that was wrong with the last beer was that it really just was bitter. Like, you didn't get anything else from it. In fact, even on the nose, you didn't really get anything. So I guess in terms of trying to make a better beer compared to that one, we've definitely done that, in that there is balance here, that you can taste more than just one element to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's more body to it this time as well, it feels like.
So I guess for you, an IPA is a bit of a boring beer, because you like the more fancy ones with exciting weirdo ingredients, no?
No, an IPA is not boring. It's definitely, it's often my beer of choice, like most people who like beer and craft beer. And it is actually, despite it being a common and allegedly simple style, it is one of the hardest to brew really well. So a very, very true to style juicy American IPA is a tricky one to handle, that balance of bitterness and aroma. And so I think we've gotten close with this one. Like I said, it could do with a little bit more aroma. I guess it just depends on your taste. So, you know, American IPAs 10 years ago were incredibly, incredibly bitter, and it's now more and more that bitterness is being replaced by really like juicy hop aroma. So it really depends what kind of style of IPA you're going for. But I think what we've done is we've made a nice, fairly bitter, pretty aromatic IPA. Nice colour, nice mouthfeel. Yeah.
The actual hop itself that we've used is much more fragrant, I think, this time around as well, which is really nice.
Yeah. Well, what we did was, rather than using a single hop like we did last time, is we used a combination. So we've got like a bit more complexity in there, a bit more like diversity of flavour. So I think that's helps with the balance as well, rather than there being kind of one dominant flavour and bitterness and then nothing else.
So I'm going to ask you a question, and I'm a bit worried that we peaked too early in the previous episode, but would you be happy to have your name attached to this beer and to serve it in new brew to general punters?
As it is, I think we would serve it as an alpha batch beer. So we would serve it as a kind of work in progress beer. I think all this needs is a rebrew with, like we said, a little less bitterness, a little more aroma, and I would put my name to this. I think it's good that they're not all fantastic. It would make for a pretty boring review, right?
Just like with humans, there's lots of different people, and some of them are boring. And they have their own place in society too.
Well, it's not a total success story, but at least we're getting better. Though it would have taken quite some skill to be as bad as the first time we attempted it. Thanks to Tash for pointing us along a better path. If you want to try our improved IPA, it will be on the taps at Ubrew Bermondsey this weekend. If you do manage to taste our improved IPA, let us know your thoughts by getting in touch on Twitter or Instagram at WeMadeABeer. It's worth adding that we're not brewing beer to try and become a brewery here. We just wanted to learn more about beer, and what better way to learn than by getting your hands dirty. If you fancy having a go at brewing your own beer, you can. Ubrew are offering We Made a Beer podcast listeners 20% off brew courses with the code WMAB20, as in We Made a Beer 20. Next week, we try to get our heads around cask beer, something we've not yet really explored on this podcast. We met up with Bradley Cummings, co-founder of Tiny Rebel, and Katie Wiles, communications manager at Camera. Before we go, here's just one more reminder that we've partnered up with honestbrew.co.uk to help you get your hands on some of the beers mentioned in this podcast. Use the code WEMADEABEER at checkout to get £10 off your first beer order.
If you like this podcast, please do leave us a review and share us with your friends. Reviewing the episodes really helps us to move up the charts in your podcast player and makes us more visible to more people. So if your mates are booze hounds or even just general foodies, please do spread the word. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to subscribe. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Bye.